Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, deep in the heart of God's country in the American Readout, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And this is the year, once again, we wake up and take our freedom back. I'm very encouraged, actually, a lot of people this year are waking up. A lot of people. And that is what we need to happen. But then we need to educate them when they do wake up. And once again, all of our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as James 4:17 admonishes us, and again, I think this should be the motto over the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, once again, Iran, very nasty rhetoric out there, and their senior commander saying, quote, we're getting prepared to overthrow Israel, and then, quote, welcome, we war with the United States. And that's not just some flunky in the Iranian regime. That is a supreme commander of the Revolutionary Guards and his lieutenant making those ideas. We welcome war with the United States. We welcome it. Unbelievable. And this is all after, by the way, a deal that was supposed to bring peace in our time. Also on the international front, in the Russian Federation, and now they have moved troops and aircraft, and the latest report is tanks into Syria. It is interesting that this follows on the headline on Drudge Report today, which... it's very alarming to see some of this stuff, but very, very informative. And here is the headline on Drudge Report today, specifically that our so-called Syrian allies have now totally betrayed the United States and handed their weapons over to Al-Qaeda. Well, who could have seen that coming? My goodness, it's like this should be a surprise to this administration. It's not a surprise. It's, of course, it's what they're going to do. And on top of that, there is now massive unrest as a result of what's going on in Syria, in Europe, because of all these refugees coming across the borders. And by the way, very interestingly, a lot of the heated rhetoric and the war of words over these refugees coming into Europe is centered around the Balkans, which... Bosnia, Serbia, Croatia, I mean, they're not 15 years on from fighting an internal war. So this really is a powder keg that is spreading, and something we need to be cognizant of, and clearly our administration is doing exactly the wrong thing at exactly the wrong time in dealing with the situation in the Middle East. On top of that, Inspire magazine, put out by Al-Qaeda, is telling blacks in America to, quote, kill white politicians, end quote. Folks, yesterday we had the rally, and I'm going to be talking about that here in a second. We had the rally against CARE here in Spokane, and there are some people that say, oh, that just can't be true. In fact, I heard one person today say that can't be true. I take them at their word. If they're going to publish something like that, I'm going to take them at their word that they're threatening the lives of American politicians. I'm going to take them at their word, just like they've threatened our soldiers here as well by name. So I don't see what the issue is of taking people at their word when they make threats like that. And I think it's naive in the extreme not to take those types of things seriously. Also on the international front, with all of these refugees flooding into Europe, there are 100,000 plus air-conditioned tents in Saudi Arabia, which has taken zero refugees. Now, they have come back and said, the Saudis, that no, that's not true. We've taken a lot more than that. And folks, I just don't think that that's accurate. I don't think it's correct. And the bottom line is, many people believe that this is hijra, which is a doctrine under jihad of immigration. Part of jihad is actually immigrating into Darul Harb, or the world at war. There are two spheres that, under Islamic doctrine, the world is viewed in, Darul Harb and Darul Islam, the House of Islam and the House of War. In other words, if you're not part of the House of Islam, you're part of the House at War. So this is, again, from their source documents. This isn't made up. This isn't speculation. It's from their source documents. And I think we need to take it seriously. And we need to ask those Gulf states why they are not taking more refugees, or is this part of an intentional push of refugees into Europe? On the national front, no Fed interest rate hike is predicted, and yet the stock market is still on a roller coaster ride. And the reason it is because our economy is continuing to not be sound. And there are some dire predictions that I've seen recently between September 23rd, tomorrow, and October 7th, that there will be some significant shakings inside of our economy. This is not just coming from Rabbi Jonathan Cahn and some of the things he's been talking about. This is actually coming from economists. I'm going to post that on Patriot Radio's Facebook page later today, a very good analysis of the potential for deflation and inflation at the same time as the economy continues to teeter. And by the way, we're coming into the window when the Chinese stock market crash should start affecting the American economy. Also on the national front, the Kentucky clerk and a Southwest Washington football coach. What do they have in common? Well, apparently they aren't allowed freedom of conscience or the right to just pray in, even in their off time. This coach in Bremerton going to the 50-yard line after games. Sometimes he was the only one that went, totally voluntary, and his players started joining him, would pray after the game. My goodness, we should have every football team praying after games like that. I don't know why it's such an issue that the school district investigates. While at the same time, there are huge problems of drug use in the schools. There are huge problems of rape in the schools. There are huge problems of teenage violence, vandalism, etc. in our schools, and they're wasting resources on a football coach praying at the 50-yard line after a game voluntarily with his players. I think that about sums up where we're at in America. Also on the national front, adding up the truly bona fide establishment or anti-establishment candidates, it comes to about 65 to 70% of the current likely Republican voters are voting anti-establishment, which is a very encouraging thing. And it's interesting also that Scott Walker has now dropped out of the race and said that the only way to beat Trump is to narrow the field. So it seems like there might be a scramble right now inside the Republican Party because the establishment has lost control. And again, I think that's a good thing. On the regional front, the Supreme Court citing us $100,000 a day here in Washington State and also finding charter schools unconstitutional. And they're citing us $100,000 a day because we need to take that money and put it into the basic education fund. And that's what this fine is supposed to be doing, by the way, because we are not fully funding education. The problem is that that's not the Supreme Court's job to appropriate money. It's a clear violation of the separation of powers. And not only that, they're losing credibility and the credibility of the court system when they do these kind of blatant violations, which is probably the bigger long-term problem. Also on the regional front, ranchers down in Oregon face jail time for setting a backfire on their own land to stop a fire that started on BLM land, and they happened to burn an acre of BLM land. They did successfully stop the fire with the back burn, and they're facing jail time for it. Now, if we took that on the other shoe, if you will, on the other side of the coin, what about what happened up here in Northeast Washington, where we had an acre fire that the citizens called in to the Forest Service to stop with an airstrike, and the Forest Service says no, and that turns into thousands and thousands of acres being burned? Does the same hold true for the Forest Service, that they should be facing a fine and jail time? Very interesting. Also on the regional front, radical environmentalists caught stealing water in Pacific County. Once again, I think highlighting this hypocrisy that the environmental rules only apply one way. And I think we need to get the word out on things like this. But not to be outdone, the governor is now saying he's going to implement caps on carbon emissions in Washington state, despite not only Republicans, but some Democrats rejecting this idea and killing the bill in this last session. He's now going to try to do it through executive order. Again, I believe, an unconstitutional move by our governor here in Washington State. On the local front, yesterday a rally against CARE, that's the Council of American Islamic Relations, in the Holy Land Foundation trial, very clearly tied to the Muslim Brotherhood in a court ruling that was upheld subsequently by the Fifth Circuit. And some people said it was an anti-Muslim rally, and it wasn't. We very specifically said that. We said it was about anti-jihad and jihadi organizations. And when we started listing off the members of CARE that had been convicted of terrorist-related charges, their hecklers suddenly left. But not before flipping off the camera of one of our activists and telling that person they were going to shove that camera where the sun don't shine. Doesn't sound too peaceful to me. We've got to get educated on this stuff, folks. Ibrahim El-Brassi was arrested because he and his wife were caught filming the superstructure of a bridge. They raided his house and in a secret sub-basement found the archive of the Muslim Brotherhood. We're talking dozens of boxes, hundreds, if not thousands of documents that conclusively link not only the Council of American Islamic Relations to the Muslim Brotherhood, but also the North American Islamic Trust directly to the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, one of the documents, the exploratory memorandum, this is written by the Muslim Brotherhood, literally said our organizations include the North American Islamic Trust. Now, why is that important? Because the North American Islamic Trust owns the mosque here in Spokane Valley, Washington. Think about that. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for us. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And once again, people have been asking, this is a listener-supported show. If you want to donate through the campaign, you can. You can go to VoteShea.com. That's VoteShea.com and donate there online. And thank you to everybody that has been supporting the show. Well, it is my great honor to introduce Michael Perutka, the co-founder of the Institute on the Constitution, former presidential candidate, and what I would consider one of the foremost experts in the country, if not in the world, on the Constitution, and somebody who has a passion for educating people that have finally woken up. Michael, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Oh, Matt, it is a great privilege and honor to be with you. Thank you for your hospitality. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's start with something that just happened here in Spokane yesterday with the Council of American Islamic Relations getting an award, or I guess better put, a salutation from the Spokane City Council. A lot of people protesting yesterday saying, why are we doing this? It ultimately brings up the issue of Sharia law and the compatibility of Sharia law with the Constitution. I would love to get your take on that to start off.
Well, sure. Let me begin by going back to the founding document of our country, which is the Declaration of Independence, and the founding principles, which are contained therein. And you might call those founding principles the philosophy of American government. We have a philosophy. As a matter of fact, I can remember that I think it was G.K. Chesterton that was quoted as saying that America might be the only country ever founded on a creed, that is to say, a system of beliefs. So there's a philosophy of government in America, and I'll explain in a moment why it's not just a philosophy, but it's the law. But let me just say what the philosophy is first. In our declaration, you can summarize the first few sentences by saying there is a God, the God of the Bible, by the way. Our rights come from him. They're not privileges of government. And the purpose of civil government is to protect and defend God-given rights. In those three statements, you've really capsulized quintessentially the American view of law and government. And by the way, our website at Institute on the Constitution, that's a group I'm aligned with, is theamericanview.com. So that American view of law and government is capsulized in the Declaration. Let me repeat it. There is a God. Our rights come from him. And the purpose of civil government is to protect and defend God-given rights. This is the American view of law and government. Now, you asked the question, how is Sharia law compatible with America? Well, if that's the American philosophy, the recognition of Allah or some other false god is absolutely incompatible with the American view of law and government. The God that is described in the Declaration of Independence is the God of the Bible, whose only begotten Son is Jesus Christ. That, and by the way, I mentioned that that's the law. It's not just a fancy philosophical principle in America, but the U.S. Code describes the Declaration of Independence as the organic law of America. So if you think about that a minute, the organic law of America, if that's the organic law, that philosophy of government is the organic law, then anything that's in contradiction to that can't be law and can't be and really can't be tolerated in America, so because it's antithetical. In other words, to accept Sharia law is to accept the notion that there is no God, and if there is no God, there is no God-given rights. There are no God-given rights, I should say. So this is an antithetical view. It's a view that is not compatible at all with the American view of law and government. It is antithetical to it and destructive of it. So it can't be tolerated. It just can't be. That, by the way, in the news lately, that's why Dr. Ben Carson is right. Although he may not realize exactly why he's right, that's another issue. But he is right with his statement about a Muslim can't be president. Sharia law is incompatible with American law.
I found some people say that statement is somehow hateful, and I mentioned yesterday at the rally that's the one thing that unites us is the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
Well, I don't understand what would be hateful about it. It's not hateful of. I mean, our founders, by the way, when they talked about Mohammedism or for that matter Buddhism or Hindu or whatever else, they called those false religions. They didn't call, when in their definition of religion, the fact that there's a there should be no religious test in the Constitution, that has to do with their definition of religion had to do with denominations of Christianity. They assumed that Christianity was the basis of our government and the basic philosophy of our government. So it's just nonsense. It's not hateful. It's no more hateful than saying Thursday is the day that comes after Wednesday. It's just a statement of fact that an idea of basing government on something other than the fact that there is an Almighty God, the God of the Bible, who is the author of law and the source of law and indeed the source of our rights. Anything antithetical to that is antithetical to America. It's a contrary view.
It's interesting that too, some people tried to call Ben Carson racist and then had to kind of walk back off of that because of his statements regarding Islam. Sure. So how do we educate people enough? And where do you think the focus would be on education around the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence so that we don't have to have these discussions, which seem to be, in my mind at least, kind of threshold issues about being an American?
Well, sure they are. And that's interesting the way you say that, because, yes, they should be threshold issues, but we have kind of wandered so far away from an American view. And when I say wandered, we've really been pushed. we've really not drifted away. We've been pushed away by forces in America, such as the government schools and the major media. We have been dumbed down or dumbed out of this American view of government, and that causes us to wrestle with issues that should be that we shouldn't even need to wrestle with. They should be obvious to us, but they're not obvious to us because we are basically a dumbed down people. And I'm not trying to be insulting to the American people, but John Adams, our second president, and one of the members of the committee that drafted the Declaration of Independence, he said that our Constitution is intended for a moral and religious people. And when he said moral and religious, the religion he was talking about was a Christian religion. and it's intended for a moral and religious people, and it's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. So if we find that our Constitution is not working today, we have to, I think, ask ourselves, Matt, is it the Constitution's fault, or is it our fault because we are no longer that moral and religious people, that is to say, a people that is capable of self-government? We've drifted into all these heresies about government, and we're easily confused by these things because we really don't have those basics. So I've been involved with a group called Institute on the Constitution for about the last 15 years. I helped to co-found it. And as I mentioned, our website is theamericanview.com, theamericanview.com. And what we do is we publish materials and courses of study, whole courses of study on the U.S. Constitution, on what it means to be what it means to serve a jury duty. We have courses of study on what a sheriff's job is, what a constitutional sheriff's job is. But what we're trying to do with these courses of study and these materials is to bring people back, bring Americans back to a way of thinking like Americans again. We have been, again, I think, dumbed out of thinking like Americans, and this has happened to all of us. It's me and you and everybody listening. This is because we've been indoctrinated and pummeled, if you will, by these things which are nonsense and which are antithetical to the American view. These are things, Matt, our grandparents knew easily. Our great-grandparents knew for sure. But we have forgotten them or lost them, and we need to recover them. Our courses of study at theamericanview.com are not things that are revolutionary in the sense that they're brand new. They're actually based on things that are very old. They're not revolutionary as much as they're restorative. We're trying to go back to a way of thinking that's American and that American view, by the way, that I described, again, there is a God, our rights come from him, the purpose of civil government is to protect God-given rights. That's essentially the American view, and that's a biblical view. It's not a Sharia view. It's a biblical view of law and government, and that's that biblical view was the foundation that led to a great deal of wonderful success in America. And to the extent that we have jettisoned that connection that recognizes God and his authority, we've suffered horrible, horrible consequences.
We have indeed, and I think that's where the attack has been the fiercest. I talked about this clerk in Kentucky. I talked about this football coach in Bremerton. I mean, just even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, somebody praying somewhere was, I mean, there were anomalies, there were cases where people got in trouble for it, but it wasn't like this continued overwhelming march against Christians in this country. And yet that's what it seems like today.
Well, sure. You know, in a sense, what happened, that coach in Bremerton and the clerk, Kim Davis in Kentucky, really are a result of partly of the same problem. You know, I had the great privilege to go out to Kentucky. I live in Maryland, by the way. I live near Annapolis, Maryland, which is very close to Washington, D.C., the belly of the beast here. But I traveled out to Kentucky to speak on behalf of Kim Davis. And what I tried to point out there is I challenged the local officials to say, show me the law where is the law that says that she has to, that a clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky, or anywhere in the United States, has to issue marriage licenses to the people of the same sex? There is no law. There is no law. And what is called law is a Supreme Court opinion, which, of course, is not law. Article 1, Section 1, of the Constitution. That is to say, Matt, the very first sentence of the Constitution, after the preamble, the very first sentence of the Constitution says, all, begins with the word all legislative power herein granted is vested in a Congress of the United States. Now, I just ask your audience, Matt, to do the math. If all legislative power, if all lawmaking power is vested in Congress, then how much is left over for the courts?
Well, the answer has to be zero.
Well, it's an easy math problem. And by the way, the same math problem would apply to the executive. If all lawmaking authority is vested in Congress, then how much is left over to the president for an executive order? Zero. See, zero. There's no law. Whatever executive orders are, whatever court opinions are, they're not law. It even says at the top of the page, opinion in the case of a court opinion. So think of the massive implications of that. We're talking about this Hodges. What is it? Obergefell v. Hodges decision. That's claimed by many to be the law of the land now, but of course it's not law because it comes from a court. Courts don't make law; legislatures make law. So what I set out in Kentucky was, please either show me the law or free Kim Davis. Show me the law or free Kim Davis. Now the same thing I guess would apply to the Bremerton coach. Show me the law that says I can't pray. Well, there's a Supreme Court opinion somewhere that says blah, 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 blah. But whatever that is, that's not the law. But see, breaking through this is like breaking through a hypnosis that the American people have gone through. We have been trained up to think that when the Supreme Court speaks, whatever it says is the law. Well, I've just described to you the legal argument from Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution, why that can't be so. It absolutely can't be so. Courts don't make law. And that is an absolute fact, a legal fact, that has been, again, covered up from the American people. And Kim Davis, God bless her, she was one person who helped to bring this to the forefront because she said, where's the law? And, of course,
there is no
law.
It's interesting that the Kentucky Constitution itself says that marriage should be between one man and one woman.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what it said. So if she is upholding her oath and upholding the law that's actually on the books, then she has to follow the Kentucky Constitution. And I see and I hear a lot of people make this argument, and I want to hear your response to it. They'll say the Supreme Court is the final arbiter of what is or what is not constitutional. And therefore, this whole thing with Kim Davis, she's wrong. So how do you respond to that?
Well, it's just not true. If you say the Supreme Court is the final arbiter, what you're saying is the court is above the Constitution. If you say the Supreme Court is the final arbiter of what the Constitution means, then what you're saying is you don't really have a Constitution, you just have a court. See, the beauty of the Constitution in its origin and in its effect is that every person who takes an oath to uphold it and protect it is bound to do exactly that with whatever power and whatever office they have. Now, I happen to be a local elected official in Anne Arundel County, Maryland, near Annapolis, Maryland. I have the responsibility, the duty to say, this is what the Constitution says, regardless of what a Supreme Court justice says. Everybody that takes an oath has that. In our American history, Matt, we've seen examples of this. Andrew Jackson, when the Supreme Court rendered an opinion about the constitutionality of the bank, he said, well, that's nice. They have their opinion, and I have mine. He's bound by his oath to the Constitution as well. In other words, if you accept the fact that the Supreme Court is the final and only arbiter of what the Constitution says, then you accept the fact that you really don't have a Constitution. You only have a court, and you've also aggrandized that court to being actually God. Because if you say, I am the lawmaker, who are you saying you are? You're saying you're God. And that's what the court has been doing ever since, well, I mean, when I became conscious of it was back in 1973 with Roe v. Wade. Because Roe v. Wade, again, is only, we've had 60 million babies die because of that decision, and yet we should have ignored it. So you might ask, well, what should we do about that? If the Supreme Court is not the final arbiter, what should we do? Well, governors, for example, of states should interpose. They should stand up and say, like Andrew Jackson said, well, that's nice that you have your opinion, but I have mine, and you go try to enforce yours. See, courts don't have powers of enforcement.
They don't. And they don't have the not only do they not have the manpower to enforce, they don't have the financial wherewithal, they don't have anything. There's no real true force behind it. It was supposed to be the weakest branch.
Right, that's what Madison said. But we are doing it for them by our ignorance, by not standing up and objecting. So what we need, it seems to me, is everything on a state level, from a governor to an attorney general, to stand up and say, you know, we've read that opinion, but we've also read the Constitution, and we've also, by the way, read the Bible. And we recognize those as the higher moral law and the higher legal, in the case of the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. And we don't accept what you said, court. And I think the court now, with the latest things that it said, has said such outrageously stupid things and unsupportable things that now people are beginning to stand up and say, and have the courage to say, well, you know, that shouldn't be followed. And of course it shouldn't be followed because it's not the law. And it never was the law. But so hopefully America, with these really false and ignorant cases that are coming out of the Supreme Court, is maybe perhaps waking up out of its stupor to the point where it recognizes the truth. But we still need local officials on the county level, we need state officials, we need attorney generals, state's attorneys, we need governors who will look back at the Supreme Court, quote the 10th Amendment, and quote the Constitution and say, you know, you just render opinions, you don't make law, and therefore people like the Bremerton coach and Kim Davis, we don't recognize whatever your opinion is about them, because we know the law. But that's what has to happen. We know, and by the way, I'm sorry to circle back again, but I'm circling back to a commercial for Institute on the Constitution. We publish a course on the U.S. Constitution, and you can learn about it at theamericanview.com. That is designed, again, to get people to connect these dots and see that what we've been submitting to is not right, and it's not legal, and we need to break out of it.
This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with Michael Perutka, the co-founder of Institute on the Constitution, also former U.S. presidential candidate. I want to hone down on this part of it, because I've made that argument before, that the Supreme Court is not the final arbiter, they can't be, of what is or what is not constitutional. And then people said, well, that's going to lead to chaos, Matt. That is going to lead to chaos, and you can't have every single elected official around the country determining on their own what they think is constitutional or not. That's going to lead to chaos. What is your response to that argument?
I would argue that, no, what we have now is chaos. What we have now is five unelected judges enforcing their worldview on 300 million people. What we have now is chaotic and unlawful. The beauty of the Constitution is that if in fact we had local officials and state officials who understood what the Constitution said, who were committed to God's standard of right and wrong, that is to say, they had a biblical worldview, we would have that moral and religious people, and we would have that balance that would ensure our freedom. Take for example the Second Amendment. Theoretically, it seems to me the Second Amendment is the most sweeping language in the Constitution. It says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So let's just if you think about what that language means, it doesn't, like, for example, the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. It's a restriction on Congress, right? But the Second Amendment says this right of the people shall not be infringed. So theoretically, let's say if the federal government infringed on the right, then the state government would have a state official, like an attorney general or a governor, would have the ability to interpose and say no. He would be able to protect the individual from the tyranny of the federal government. But take it the other way. Let's say the state enacted a gun control law which was unconstitutional. The federal government or the local government, the local county government, either one of those officials, a local sheriff or the president of the United States, could interpose and say no. So you see, in the case of everybody being committed to these freedoms, they would be protected from many angles. It would be far from, I don't agree that this would be, what did you say, anarchy?
Chaos,
I don't think it would
yeah.
be anarchy. It would be just the opposite. It would be guaranteed liberty with respect to these things. The idea that all the answers or all the standards come from government is statist and wrong and failed and Marxist and historically a failed idea. The idea that there is a God and his moral law is supreme, and the Constitution the Declaration is a protection, is meant to protect God-given rights, and the Constitution is meant to limit government power so those rights aren't infringed. You know, that's a marvelous system. I'm not saying it's perfect, but with that system and people who understood that system, we would, I believe, have far from anarchy, we'd have much more liberty.
I agree. We would have much more liberty, and particularly, and it's a good segue into the whole issue of life and Planned Parenthood. Here in Washington State, to our great shame, we actually legalized abortion before Roe versus Wade. But since then, and I think Gianna Jessen put it very well in her congressional testimony, where she said, and she was an abortion survivor, a saline abortion, by the way, which, as you well know, burns the baby to death, and then the baby is born dead. The whole testimony was just powerful, but particularly powerful, I think, was when she said, "Where were my rights as a woman?" I thought that was one of the most powerful things she said, but that's really kind of the logical extension of all this chaotic court decision-making, is that ultimately it is literally affecting whether people live or die. And people will make the counter-argument that, do you really want that baby to grow up in a horrible household, abused, which is obviously presuming that that's what would happen. And I have to take the position, I'd like to get your reaction, I have to take the position that all constitutional rights, I should say, all rights that are God-given, unalienable, that are protected by the Constitution should attach at conception. Otherwise, somewhere after that, along that line, a human being can decide when those rights are taken away. And that obviously is tyranny.
Well, sure. You know, I have to go back. You know, you mentioned that your state legalized abortion, right, before Roe v. Wade. Did you say
right.
that?
Okay. That's their quote, not mine. Yes.
Okay. Well, can I just comment on that for a second, because
absolutely,
that's an important thing. It's an important point to understand. There's no such thing as legalizing abortion. Now this. Let me explain. Our founders believed, and America is based on the idea that there's this higher moral law that transcends human law. And Exodus 20:13 says, "Thou shalt not murder." So there is no authority in human government, whether it be at the state or the federal or whatever level, to actually legalize abortion. So, and I'm not trying to be overly picky here, but my point is, we shouldn't accept terms like, well, they legalized abortion, because there is no such animal. That is impossible. You can't legalize that. State or local or any government can't give a right to do that which God says is wrong. There is no such right. I realize we think like there is in America today for a number of things, but it's just not so, and it never was. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, I mentioned the Declaration of Independence. Here's a good example of the point I'm trying to make. In the Declaration, you know, most of the Declaration of Independence, Matt, is a list of complaints against King George and against Parliament for the things they were doing, like the Stamp Act and the Tea Act and what they called the Townshend Acts and the Intolerable Acts, etc. And what our founders called those things in the Declaration is, they didn't call them law. They didn't say, like we say, Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, or they didn't. What they called those acts of Parliament pretended legislation, which I think is a great term.
That is a great term.
It's not only historic because it's in the Declaration, but it's actually very descriptive. They called those things pretended legislation. In other words, they weren't even in their articulation or their language giving them the benefit of saying that these are law. No, they're not law. They're pretended things. So I think when we look at something like a Roe v. Wade, that's not even pretended legislation because it's a court opinion. It's pretended law in two ways. First of all, it's not issued by a legislature. Nobody voted on it, and no governor, you know, no executive signed it. But it's also, even if they did, it would still be pretend because it violates Exodus 20:13. So in America, Americans, for the most part, I think this is part of our big problem here. We have forgotten what the standard is for right and wrong. We have forgotten what the standard is for valid for understanding what is valid law and what isn't. We call things law because some guy on TV called them law. You know, some talking head, some Dan Blather or whatever said that these things were law. But what our ancestors realized were that to be law, something needed, first of all, to have moral authority. That is to say, it had to be in conformance with Scripture, with God's word. And then secondly, it had to be in conformance with the Constitution, that is to say, what we as men have agreed that government has the authority to do, that is to say, by the consent of the governed. So in America, my worry is, or my statement here, Matt, is that we don't know what the law is. We don't know what the rules are. We've been told that law is this phony, fake, fiat thing, and we go with it because we don't know any better. And again, going back to John Adams' quote about a moral and religious people, the Constitution is intended for moral and religious people and wholly inadequate for the government of any other. I'm going to make this argument to you that a truly Christian people can't be subjugated. It can't be ruled over by tyranny, a truly Christian people. So if you're going to conquer a Christian people, what you first have to do is to get them to stop being Christian. You got to get them to throw away their Christianity or to be dumbed out of it. And then you don't even have to conquer them because they will have conquered themselves. A Christian people will see a tyrant coming, and they'll resist him. And a truly Christian and moral and religious people won't. I think, to some extent, that's why we're seeing those who are not truly Americans, but and have no allegiance to America, but are in charge of America, because we've got a lot of that. We've got mostly people running America who have no allegiance to America, and they don't love America, they don't care for America. What they're doing is trying to overrun us with other worldviews and other cultures, and they're opening our borders and trying to bring us into Sharia or whatever other law. They're trying to take us away from that connection to God and His law. And when they're able to do that, they shall have conquered us, or like I say, we shall have conquered ourselves, because we've jettisoned that connection and to what is true and right and real, which is the fact that God is the author of law, which our founders understood and put in our Declaration of Independence.
And what we end up having is really essentially lawlessness. And
right.
I think that's what we see today. I think you brought up a great point of calling it pretended legislation. In fact, I'm going to start using that everywhere I go, pretended legislation, pretended law, because that is exactly accurate and exactly right. So over the last few months, there have been a lot, and particularly pastors, I kind of find it interesting, that have been saying, you know, before that they were saying, this will never happen in America. Never happen in America. We'll never see same-sex marriage in America. It'll never happen in America. We'll never see our sovereignty, national sovereignty, being given away. We'll never see that happen in America. We'll never see our state sovereignty being given away. Never see that happen in America. And those same people now are saying, oh my goodness, it just happened in America. What do we do? And they've woke up. What does the Institute on the Constitution do specifically? I know you've got your course on the Constitution. What do you do? And kind of you could break down the course to train people that have just woken up.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. And let me also say that we not only have a course of instruction, but we also have courses of instruction that are aimed at the youth, because this is very important to raise up young people. We have what we call American clubs. And again, if you go to our website, theamericanyou.com, you can see how we're through American clubs with high school students and middle school students, we are trying to reinvigorate them with this understanding, with a biblical understanding of law and government. So our course, if I could just say it simply, what we first do is we try to establish what our founders understood as the American view and what it's based on, this biblical view of law and government. And we, in the course, Matt, we contrast that with other views. We don't say it's the only view. There are views of government where, for example, there are socialist Marxist views that say that the purpose of government is to redistribute wealth. It's to do other. That's not the American view. That's not our formal view. But that is a view of law and government. And so we try to train youngsters and oldsters to understand, look, there are different views. Please understand what view we were founded on, so that we can recognize when a view of government and a methodology of government is in play that's not that, or that's antithetical to that. So the first thing is to recognize that. Then we go into a history of America, which is very important because, you know, if you don't know your history, you don't really know who you are. And we go into a history of America, and we talk about the religious beliefs of the Founding Fathers, and then we talk about how those religious beliefs became policy beliefs. They became public policy of our founders. And then we trace through the constitutional period, what we talk about, the period between the Declaration and the Constitution. So we take these beliefs and we kind of put them in this historical context. And it's only after we build this context that we then start to talk about the actual text of the Constitution. And we go through Article 1, 2, 3, which is the different branches, and 4, 5, 6, and 7. We go through the actual words of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the subsequent amendments. But it's only after you've understood the pretext that the text really makes sense. Because courts can take the text of the Constitution, and they can say is doesn't mean is. You know, they can twist things into pretzel kind of shapes, but it's harder to fool people if they understand the pretext. That is to say, the history, the religious beliefs, the political philosophies that the religious beliefs were part of. So our course is designed to, and then at the very end of our course, we talk about the broad sweep of history that's taken us away from a biblical and constitutional view, and then talk about, well, how can we return? How can we get back to that? And what are some practical, palpable things we can do to do that? So, I mean, in a nutshell, I've done my best to tell you that's what our course is about. We've designed it so that you can take it online. You can actually get the materials and take a small group, a church small group, or in your town hall, in your basement. You guys got basements in Seattle there, or in Spokane?
Well, at least in Spokane we do. I don't know about Seattle.
Well, whatever. What I'm saying, in your family room, in your living room, in your church, our course is designed so that you can. It's turnkey. It's user friendly in that sense, so that you can watch the DVDs if you want to do it that way. We supply DVDs of the course material. You can then take the test, do the discussion material, do some of the other reading, the other homework, etc. When you host a course like that and you complete it, we will send a certificate to you, and you know, we'll graduate you. We'll help to graduate you with some parameters that we have with our hosts. And people shouldn't worry that they can't teach this because they don't have an in-depth knowledge of it. We try to make it, again, so that all you really need to do is to host it. We'll supply the teaching materials. You just get the coffee and the donuts and put the chairs together whatever. And provide the venue and the organization of it, and we can do the teaching of it. We'll make it easy for you, and we'll be beside you along the way. Again, if you want to call us, by the way, I didn't give the phone number, Matt. If you don't mind, if I do that,
no, absolutely.
It's 866-730-9796. Again, 866-730-9796. Or again, our website is theamericanview.com. The American View. Don't just type in American View, because I think you get a bad website. theamericanview.com. And we'll be happy to try to step you along with this. What we're looking for is people who realize there's a problem in America. They realize something is broken, and we need to make a change, and we need to take constructive, palpable, practical steps toward that, and that, I believe, will lead to local government changes. I mean, I'm an example of that myself. I mean, I'm a local, I'm a county elected official. That's one thing you can do when you graduate the course. Another, you know, you can run for office, and you're well equipped to do that when you've taken the course, because you know what the law is, and you're not fooled. Another thing you can do is teach the course either to your family, to your children, to your church community. There's a number of applications that we go through that once you gain this information, you can begin to use it in the culture to reinvigorate the culture with an American view of law and government. That's what we're trying to do, so that we're no longer fooled by those that are attempting to fool us.
Do you have any final thoughts for the young people listening? I agree with you. This is one of the key group of peoples that we need to be talking to, because we don't do mentorship anymore like we used to in this country. And yet there are a lot of young people today that are looking and searching for the truth. Any word directly to our youth in the last minute we got?
Well, sure. Please, I would ask the youth again to come and look at our website. If you're hearing what I'm saying and what we're talking about tonight, and you have an interest, please come to our website. You'll see in our American clubs what some other youth have come to understand, how they've expressed themselves, and how they've worked with other youth to reinvigorate America with American ideals and truly Republican, and I don't mean capital R, small R, Republican principles. There's nothing more important. If you're a young person, there's nothing more important than your liberty for the rest of your life, because liberty is eroding, and liberty principles are eroding from the minds of Americans. It's up to you to learn them, be able to articulate them and reinvigorate the culture with them. That it's your future that we're talking about. So, and you don't want to be fooled, young people. You don't want to be fooled. You know, know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. I don't think you want to live your life in a cloud, just doing whatever you're told to do. I think you want liberty, and liberty comes from understanding that God's authority, and the form of government that is designed to effectuate God's authority in human affairs. So I urge you, please, again, to go to theamericanview.com.
Amen. Michael, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. We'll have you on again, my friend. I really appreciate it. And let's stay in touch and keep up the fight for freedom and liberty.
What a great privilege. Thank you very much for your hospitality. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio. That was Michael Peruca, co-founder of the Institute on the Constitution, former presidential candidate. I just posted the American View link to the website on Patriot Radio's Facebook page. Take a look at it. And especially if you want to start educating people, they have a great course on the Constitution, pretty plug and play. I mean, literally, you don't have to be an expert on the Constitution, but you can surely teach people through it. And most importantly, you can teach our youth. And for everybody listening out there on Patriot Radio, we are going to start using the words pretended legislation, pretended law, when we're talking about things like the Supreme Court opinion that is being foisted on us as the so-called law of the land. It is not. Well, thank you to everybody that has been listening today. I really appreciate it. Go to Patriot Radio US on Facebook, like the page. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.